crackers to the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll school you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISOs? Let me do my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leave you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISOs, RAMs, SIP, SIPs. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
Hello, everybody. I am Stank Dog, the cookie pimp, back up in this biatch. Coming
aw,
at
shizzle.
You. What's that?
I said, aw, shizzle.
Aw, for real. Off the hizzle. This is April 6, 2004. Episode 40 of Binary Revolution Radio. As you heard, my co-host this week is not Theory himself.
Well, that's cracking.
What's crack-a-lackin'? Crack-a-lack-a-lackin'. All right, a little overboard there, huh?
That's all right.
All right, anyway. Now, let me just start off the show. We got a lot of housekeeping, a lot of stuff to talk about. 2,600 meetings happened this past week. So we got a lot of stuff to talk about, but we do have one very, very big announcement. We mentioned it in the forums. There's going to be a huge announcement on the show, but I'm going to make you wait for it. So I'm not going to tell you up front. At the end of the show, if I remember, I'll make the announcement. So, start off with some of the housekeeping. Being a statistics junkie, I like to look at my stats from my site, see who's visiting, see what kind of interesting information I can find out. And since this is the beginning of April, I thought we'd look at March stats. And the highest country we had visiting this month was .ca, Canada, coming in at, I think, fifth place on the list. Now, I exclude .net and .com. I just like to see what countries come. Poland was second, and England. Can't smell. Poland and England both very close, second and third. Turkey was fourth in the as far as countries go. I thought that was interesting. Turkey was number fourth, and Norway finishing out the top five.
I say big shouts to Turkey.
Yeah, right. That's interesting. I mean, it's an interesting hit. I don't know. Welcome. I don't know what to say. And again, that's taking out .net, .com, .edu, .us. I think was actually up there, but I don't really count that too much. And .gov and .mil, they're on the list, but man, I'm telling you, they're getting shuffled down. They used to be consistently top 10, both of them, or at least top 15, both of them. Usually one was in the top 10, but tell you what, guys, you guys just aren't doing it for me. The feds, man,
they might be being slick and, like, going to fucking some other network provider.
Dude, that's a good call. They might, you know where they're going? Turkey.
Oh, yeah.
See, we're on to you. You can't fool us, damn feds. No, we know what's up with you guys. I know you're not going away that easily. What else was interesting out of my statistics? Still getting a lot of hits to the robots.txt file. And that is, I assume, from the Robots and Spydergers article, still in this 2600, telling people to check it out and explaining how it works and stuff like that. So some people are hitting that directly. And I can tell when that happens. There's no user agent sent. It's coming directly from a browser. And I guess not only am I getting people hitting it directly, I opened the forums back up to Google last month, and I think I mentioned that. So I got a lot of Google hits, Google Spider hits on the logs this time. So we got over 1,000, close to 2,000 from Google since I opened it up. So in the month of March. And a lot of click-throughs. So people are searching and finding stuff and coming through to us through Google. So that's, I guess, a pretty cool thing. One that surprised me was Jeeves. I mean, I didn't think anybody still used Ask Jeeves.
I've tried to use it once or twice, and it's terrible.
Oh, he's a moron. He's an absolute moron.
But you can ask him if he's gay, and he tells you it's none of your business.
Yeah, I know. That was funny, like, 5 years ago when it first came out, I guess.
Oh, come on. I'm just trying to let people know in case they don't.
We'll put that as a little funny thing in the show notes. See, I put all kinds of little hidden stuff in the show notes, like people click on stories, they'll take them to a funny thing, but I don't think anybody ever checks. Jeeves, he's, well, I guess figure out if he's gay or not. He got, I think, close to 1,000 hits from the Jeeves bot, or whatever it's called. And I got some new, I don't know if they're new physically just coming around, but maybe they just added us to their database. I got hits from 3 new search engines that I'd never seen or heard of before, because they're from other countries. The first one was Seznam, S-E-Z-N-A-M, which is Czechoslovakia. The second one was how do you pronounce that?
Tiscali,
I don't know, which is French. I need to ban that one. And Fireball, which is a German search engine. So I guess they just added us to their database, and now we're getting people searching from those companies coming here. And the referrals, or top referrals, again, pretty consistently is Icon and the guys over at freaksandgeeks.com, one of our hosted sites, actually. We've always gotten good hits from them. They're bringing in the freaks and the geeks, and people are linking from that site. And after we did a few episodes a while back on port knocking, they added a link to us over on their site, so we get quite a few hits from them, and they were second on the list. So that's very cool of them. So hopefully some of those people that came by from port knocking stuck around and listened to the show. And this one was interesting as well. The search terms tells you what people are searching for when they come to the site. The number one search term was hacker wallpaper.
Interesting.
I didn't see that one coming.
Oh,
I mean, it's cool, and I have all the wallpaper that everybody makes and puts up in the forums or in the gallery. And I have it rotating at work and rotating at home, you know, every 15 minutes, kind of mix it up a little bit. So apparently people are looking for this. I mean, it was the number one search term, so get to crack-a-lackin' on the old wallpaper. Come up with some cool wallpaper, post it in the gallery. By all means, people are searching for it and looking for it, so
keep making more. And some of the stuff is really cool, I got to admit.
I've said so many times how much I love it, because I can't draw. I can't draw stick people straight.
I tell you. And the number two search term was how to hack Hotmail. So everybody keep posting about how do I hack Hotmail.
Yeah, we love talking about that. We love talking about that. And it's especially clever if you word, don't come out and word, you know, because everybody knows that's the noob question. Word it differently, like, I've heard Hotmail security is very weak. What do you guys think?
Or put something like new Hotmail vulnerability with like a bunch of exclamation points and ones and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe not.
Yeah. Whatever. Hey, we have a warning system in place now, so whatever. If it's, hey, you know what, joking aside, if it's in the newbie section, I just give it a polite, short answer and close it and just move on with life. I'm not going to waste up time flaming the same thing over and over. That's the other thing, is it's been done, dude. There's no point in flaming it over and over again. Just ignore it or answer it, one or the other. Also, let's see, that's about it for the statistics. I don't know, maybe people find that boring, but I find it interesting. Find some cool stuff, see who's linking to us, who's making mention of us. You know, I find links from other forums where they're saying how much Stankdog sucks, or Binary Revolution rocks, or where's the next damn magazine, or whatever. So, it's kind of cool to follow them backwards. Oldschoolfreak.com, Dual Parallel, Bland Inquisitor. They haven't gone anywhere. You haven't heard their voice lately, but they just finished writing a very cool article, Basic Slackware Security, which is up on oldschoolfreak.com. So go check that out. It's making its rounds. There are a lot of sites now that are copying it and mirroring it and giving links back to oldschoolfreak.com. So it's very, very popular and definitely making its rounds on the web. So I think that's really, really cool. So check that out if you haven't.
Good stuff.
And I read it. I thought it was very good. I liked it a lot. You know, I absolutely checked it out. I think the day that he posted it, or the very next day, I went and checked it out. It's good stuff. And let's see, before we go to the email, I wanted to touch on the magazine and the process by which we take orders. I think it's been done before, but it's time we touch on this again because I've had a couple problems here recently. First of all, when we set up a PayPal account, we set up an orders@benrev.com email address. And that's what the PayPal account is tied to. Now, what that does is anything that's, anytime somebody makes an order, it sends a confirmation to orders@benrev.com. Well, basically that email address is unmonitored, or it was unmonitored. I would get on and check it maybe once every month or so. But I didn't really need to monitor it because all it did was send copies of the orders to that mail address. I go on to PayPal.com, log in, and I can see a list of all the orders right there in front of me. So that's how I used, that's how I tell what orders are out there, and that's how I fulfill orders. If you send feedback to orders@benrev.com, I'm not going to always see it. Now, because of these incidents, I'm going to have to start checking it more often. But please, if you have a problem with the magazine, that's basically what this comes down to. Someone says they didn't get their magazines that they ordered. Email me at stankdog@benrev.com. I mean, if you know about the magazine, I assume you know about the radio show or the forums or the site in general. I mean, to get in touch with me is not difficult. It's out there. My email address is everywhere. So emailing orders.com really, I guess if you really wanted them bad enough, you could have emailed them to me specifically. But anyway, since that is an unmonitored account, I don't notice when people try to give feedback or want to make changes. If you place an order, and maybe this is just, I don't know, this is just common sense to me, but when you go in and you place an order, you put in your shipping address. Well, that's where I'm going to mail the order to. Doesn't that make common sense?
Yeah, I would think so.
Am I missing something here?
I don't know what other address you'd want to put there, but...
Right. Well, I got an order. I had the address on there. I filled it out. And purely by luck, purely by coincidence, the person who placed the order did email orders@benrev.com with a change that he wanted to his address. It was to his work address. He said they wouldn't forward it, so he requested I put the name of the person, attention, such and such department, forward to whatever. Pure luck that I did get that email. I happened to check the orders at BenRev when that came in, so, and I had not shipped it out yet. It was laying on my desk with stamps on it, ready to mail out. It's pure coincidence, so I distinctly remember getting this, and I did exactly what he requested. So it's pure luck that he got it, and I did ship it out. Apparently, he still never got them. So, you know, fine, that happens, accidents happen. You know, I'm still pretty willing to work with people. But I never got an email saying that there was a problem. Again, he sent an email to orders@benrev.com, which is unmonitored. So, long story short, he never got his magazines and wasn't very happy about it. So I thought I'd bring it up on the air and mention... this happened once or twice, you know. For the most part, we've mailed everything out with no problems whatsoever. And we had one or two problems that we filled easily. I understand, you know, people seem to understand that we're doing this out of our basement, that this is, you know, pretty much a underground thing, and it's not like we have order fulfillment plants and stuff like that. So I'm shipping these things out as best as I can, but please contact me directly. stankdog@benrev.com and let me know if there is a problem or if you haven't gotten something. I can go in, I can verify, I keep a log of everything that I've sent and the dates that they're sent and all that kind of stuff. I can cross-reference and make sure that it left and tell you when and, you know, if it might take a few more days. Basically, it could take upwards of 2 weeks to get this. I try to fulfill them 2 or 3 days a week. Sometimes I may not get to it till a Friday of the week, so it may sit out there. If you sent your order in on a Monday or Tuesday, it may sit there till Friday before I get it. And then it'll take it 7 to 10 days to ship after that, because we send the cheapest we can afford, the best we can afford to send it, which is by USPS normal cheap mail. So give it a little time. But yes, if after a couple of weeks you haven't gotten it something, feel free to contact me about it. And be careful with your address. The address that you send me is where I'm going to send it. It's not that difficult. Anyway, I can't read minds. That's all I'm saying. Now, I do have one email I wanted to touch on. because this relates to a talk we had on the last episode about iTunes and Walmart Music Service, yada, yada, yada. And it's from a person whose real name, and we don't read those on the air, and he says, he or she says, "Hi, I'm listening to your show concerning the above topic," which was Walmart Music Service from a subject line. "I can clarify a couple things concerning Apple iTunes songs. The songs are in MPEG-4 format. You can burn them to a CD and re-rip them to MP3 if you have another MP3 player besides the iPod. Once you burn a purchased song to a CD, it is as if it's on the store-bought CD, so you can now do with it whatever you please. Walmart sucks, and I won't use their service even if they supported the Mac. Later." I forgot about that. They do not support the Mac. I think I did mention that last episode. They do not support the Mac, so obviously he's not happy about that, but even if they did, he still wouldn't be happy with it. Now, I don't know if we talked about this on the air or not before, but have you ever tried either iTunes or the Walmart?
Nope. The only reason I've never tried any of that stuff is because, first of all, they probably don't have any music I like, and second of all, they probably don't support Linux, so I've never even bothered to look, because every website that has cool stuff like that, they never support Linux, never support Mozilla, so I don't even bother.
Yeah, they do not support Linux, you are correct in that, but as far as number one, they do have all the NSYNC stuff that you want. They have all the Britney Spears, and they have the Backstreet Boys, so I don't know what you mean about not having good stuff.
Whoa, do they have Mandy Moore?
I think they had an exclusive Mandy Moore track.
Okay,
with
that's
her.
Really what matters to me.
Okay, well, there you go, man. There's reason to sign up. You know what I get a lot of? I'll go off on a tangent here. Is it Pepsi, I think, that has that iTunes under the cap game, whatever it's called?
Yeah.
And people at work bring these to me all the time. And I'm actually, you know, I've like, screw this, I'm not interested in it, but I politely, you know, they think they're being nice to me, and they are being nice to me, bring me this thing. And I'd be polite and thank them, but I was never going to use them, but I'm starting to get a handful of them now. I'm thinking I might try it out and see what I can come up with just to play with it.
Why not, man?
Yeah, so, anyway, he says, back to this email, you can burn it once and then re-rip it. Now, what stops me from burning it more than once? Like, you know, I think the Walmart thing said you could burn it up to 10 times. It would let you burn it to 10 times. Is there some kind of control in digital rights management that prevents that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that there's DRM built into that.
Well, and that limits how many times you can burn it?
Yeah, I think so.
Wouldn't that type of feature have to be application dependent? The application has to honor that.
I
mean, if there's like I don't know, I'm picturing, correct me here, I'm picturing it like almost like an ID3 tag. It's going to have some parameters in there or something like that, as well as encryption and blah, blah, blah. But it's going to have some flags set of, is this copyright, yes or no? Is this encrypted, yes or no? Has this been burned X number of times? Is this eligible to be burned? Stuff like that. It's got to have some control variables in there.
Right.
So isn't that going to be application-specific as to whether or not that application bothers to look at those flags? I mean, let's say it's copywritten, number of copies you're allowed to make is zero. Number of times you're allowed to rip it, zero. If that's embedded in the DRM. I mean, it seems like a small thing. I mean, it seems like there's going to be burning software that comes out that just ignores it.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure there will be eventually. The thing that I'm not sure about is the person who wrote in said that it uses MPEG-4 audio, which is MPEG-4 AAC, which stands for Advanced Audio Codec. I don't know what player actually supports MPEG-4 AAC, because maybe it's just some special iTunes player that supports it. Maybe it's just this special, like Walmart has some special player that supports it. And if that's the only thing they can read the file anyway, they can pretty much enforce any type of digital rights they want on it.
Well, again, until, like you said, somebody develops an application that will support them.
Yeah,
and
basically,
you know,
all you have to do is just buy the MPEG standard. Oh, God, I can tell you, reading MPEG standards is impossible, but eventually you can figure it out. And, yeah, somebody can write a player for it. They just have to reverse engineer the DRM that's built in there. That's the thing.
Well, historically, the DRM hasn't been real strong with the Sharpie markers and the...
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's been, you know... this is different. This is, you know, that was copy prevention. This is DRM. It's a little bit different, of course, but point being, how strong, how powerful, and how valid is it right now?
Well, it's not unbreakable. There's a lot of ways around it. But.
Yeah, I'm sure there is, and it's only a matter of time before people find it. And then what are they going to do? Start suing people again?
Of course.
You know, go through this whole crap again? And Apple's going to support MPEG-4. You know, they're in bed with the motion picture industry, so it may very well be some type of iTunes player, iTunes iPod standard.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. It seems like I've downloaded MP4 and played them on maybe XP, maybe Windows Media Player. I don't remember. Seems like I've played them before, but I can't verify that. So.
But then again, like I said, if it is MPEG-4 audio, but it's wrapped in some DRM thing, so the whole file's encrypted, then, you know, the actual data isn't MPEG-4, but it's encrypted, so you need their special player anyway. I don't really know how it works. Like I said, I've never used it before, but my impression is that it would be some file that's completely encrypted, and when it's decrypted, it's in MPEG-4 format. That's my guess.
Well, and, you know, and he says in his email, and this is a very valid, simple suggestion, that you can burn it to a CD, but then you re-rip it back out to MP3, just as though it were, you know, any other CD you'd be ripping.
Yep.
So that seems like another obvious workaround to DRM. You can fill it up with DRM all you want to, but rip it once to MP3 and... Anyway, it just sounds like a futile attempt to me. Anyway, that is it for our housekeeping this time. And we move into the show and tell portion of the show. And... I had a funny story from my 2600 meeting, but before I go into it, I thought you would take the stage a little bit, because I've been talking for a while and I need a drink. So you were telling me about New Phone, and I think you wanted to talk about that if I'm correct.
Yeah, okay. I've been using New Phone for a bit, and it's cool. You can do all the stuff, you know, all this caller ID spoofing and all this other junk with it, which is awesome. And, I've been playing around with VoicePulse, too. VoicePulse seems like a more professional service, but New Phone definitely has some perks that VoicePulse doesn't have, which namely would be that you can get people's caller ID from... you can get their ANI, their automatic number identification, even when they block the caller ID. So New Phone definitely has perks over VoicePulse. My only problem with New Phone now is it seems like everyone and their mother can use their New Phone to call internationally except for me. Every time I try to make an international call, it just fucking hangs up on me.
Because New Phone owns you.
Yeah, New Phone does own me. Yeah, I talked to... Actually, shout out to Nick84. I talked to him today. He gave me a call on my asterisk box. And we were talking for a bit. And he was the one who brought it to my attention that people can make international calls on it. And I don't know. He said it's just easy. He said just dial 011 and the country code and the number. And it works. But it just tells me my call's been rejected. So...
Hmm.
That's really upsetting me. So if any of the listeners happen to know if there's anything special I have to do to my New Phone account to get it to work, feel free to write me mail. I would love to hear it.
And that reminds me, we have to point your email address because you changed it.
I'm
going to make a note because we're not going to give... Let's see. Let me make a note. Forward email. Now, also, I don't want to put you on the spot, but did you do any research on that? We were talking offline this weekend about that Pingtel product.
Oh, no, I didn't really get to mess with it too much. I've been really looking into voice over IP hardware a lot, but I haven't messed with that particular one. Pingtel, refresh my memory now. Hold on.
Now, and actually, I will make this as a call out to anybody who does have experience or know anything about it. Pingtel is a company, but they're... What they've done is open source their IP PBX, the SIP Exchange, it's called.
Oh, right.
Right?
Yeah, they have two different products. The SIP Exchange is an IP PBX. It's rack mount. It looks from the picture like it's a 2RU unit. It might be 1RU. In any case, it sounds very much like Asterisk. It supports SIP and a whole bunch of other cool junk, and it says that it supports other industry standards, including Java, Linux, XML, and the biggest one for a lot of people out there that's buzz is kind of starting about it is Voice XML, which basically is it's a markup language that lets you determine or lets you design voice prompts and like entire voicemail systems and everything in XML. It's really amazing, and you can have it do text to speech and everything. You can say prompt the user for, you know, a 10-digit number and say please enter a 10-digit number, and it'll text to speech. It'll say please enter a 10-digit number. It'll beep, dial your number. It does verification. It's really cool. Voice XML is awesome.
And I read in here, and that's one of the things that sounded cool to me, was that it had interactive voice response, IVR, it calls it, but I didn't realize it was voice XML.
Yeah, the thing is, products like Asterisk, they can do IVR, but they do IVR by, like, you know, writing Perl scripts or writing AGI stuff in C or you know, making a fancy dial plan that does all that stuff. But the SoupExchange sounds like it'll be much easier to create an IVR with, because you just do the stuff in XML and it's pretty straightforward. And actually, I found out that there actually is a voice XML debugger. That I was worried that, you know, writing voice XML would just be like, you know, just shooting in the dark, having no idea what's going on, just hoping it worked. But there is like a full true blue debugger for it now. And sounds to me like that's what people in the future are going to be using. Perl scripts are nice. They let you do things voice XML can't. But for quick and dirty stuff and for basic stuff, voice XML is the way to go.
Very cool stuff.
And
cool.
One more thing. Pingtel also has a SIP phone, an IP phone, which basically looks like a Cisco phone, kind of like Cisco had sex with Fisher-Price. It's like really big and round and has huge knobs on the side and stuff like that. If anybody's used one of these phones, please let me know. I've never seen a review of it or nothing. I just wanted to know, you know, how much it costs and if it actually works and if the fact that it's got this really stupid design gets in the way of using it or not. But other than that, it's got a nice big display in it, a whole bunch of buttons. Looks like it could be a cool toy.
Buttons are very cool. The more, the better. I hate dials. You know what? This is another weird tangent. I don't even like a microwave with a dial on it. I want buttons, damn it. I like LEDs and buttons.
Yeah, the thing that I dislike about dials is that you have to, like, turn something like 15 times to get to where you want to go. You got buttons, you just punch it in and you're there.
Yeah, see, I don't even want to turn it once. That's too much energy. I want to push the button.
Yep.
And it has to beep. Or depress, or, you know, it has to have some kind of response. It has to feedback. I can't just be one of those tap buttons. I don't like those. I gotta feel some resistance or hear some kind of confirmation that the button has been depressed.
Hmm.
I need gratification, damn it.
I see.
Boy, I opened myself up to that one.
Yeah.
we'll leave that in. What the hell? And actually, mentioning voice XML could have been a good segue to our main topic later on tonight, so keep that in mind. But I'm going to give a little bit of a story from my 2600 meeting. First of all, our meeting has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger each month, and that's so cool. We had more new people this time. I think we must have had upwards of 15 people at any given time, maybe even more. I just kind of eyeballed it. A couple one-timers, I'm sure. I don't think we'll see back some, you know, curiosity seekers, and some that maybe we will. Obviously, we had some of the regulars there, and they showed up earlier than usual. Normally, you know, people, even though the meetings officially start at 6, people sometimes don't stumble in till 7 or 7:30, 8 o'clock, you know, getting off for work and stuff like that and driving down, so, or up, whatever the case may be. It was a lot of people there, and they were there pretty early this time, so it was a good long meeting. And actually, I'd like to take a moment if I can. There was one person who showed up fairly early in the meeting, and I was speaking to this guy. He was a new person, and more people started to show up, and we started talking amongst ourselves and stuff like that. And the next thing I looked, he had disappeared on me. So I don't know if he had to leave, or if I hope we didn't send him away thinking we were ignoring him or anything like that. So if you're listening out there, please contact me. I don't want you to think that. Not to turn this into a big drama or soap opera or anything, but he had gotten off work, and I know we were chatting, and everything seemed cool, but I'm guessing he probably just had to leave earlier, and I didn't get to say goodbye to him. So if you're out there listening, contact me, and I hope you do show up to the next meeting. Now, for the story from my meeting this time, it is almost like a soap opera, our meeting. We have fairly semi-regularly people that I call the hire a hackers. They show up to the meeting because they want to hire a hacker to do some dirty work for them. And since I've been going, you know, once every 2 or 3 months we get one. And they're harmless. For the most part, we listen to their story. We try to educate them and explain what we don't do and that he's barking up the wrong tree and, you know, depending on whatever the case may be. So it's funny. It's a funny phenomenon that happens. And this month we had another one. But I actually felt a little bit for this guy. This was an older gentleman, and he came to the meeting because, well, he came to the meeting with the 2600 magazine in his pocket, and he saw me there with my laptop, and he was one of the people that came pretty early on in the meeting, and asked if it was 2600 meeting and introduced himself, very polite, articulate, and respectful. Which is unusual for a group of hackers to be treated respectfully. I hope that's a trend that continues. And I guess the short version, I'll give you the shortest version I can. He basically was caught up in one of those online scams. Not the Nigerian one, but almost. He's actually an investor, and there are these capital investment clubs or some, I'm not sure the exact terminology, that are basically groups of people that pool their money together and invest it as a group, a large sum of money, so that the interest and the return on that large investment usually gives you higher returns than smaller savings investments or smaller stock investments and things like that. So there are perfectly legitimate ones out there, and he's had experience. It's not new. It wasn't anything that was new to him. However, he did get caught up in one that was basically a scam. And what the scam was they actually, and I got to give some credit, I don't like, you know, the fact that this happened, but at least they did it in an interesting way, I guess. I don't want to give them credit, but they got a bunch of people to invest in this thing, which is the point of the whole investment club. And what they did is when people invested, all the people who invested small amounts of money, they paid them back. When the time came and they wanted to take their funds out, they basically put it into, if you want to think of it as a debit account, you put in a set amount of money, and it sounds kind of silly, it sounds fishy, but you send them an amount of money and it gets put into kind of a debit account and a running account that calculates your interest and the interest upon that interest, cumulative interest, and that's really where the money is to be made. And what you do is, as that builds, you can start taking money back out of it anytime you want. So the goal, the ideal goal for an investor is to let that money build up for a little while, and as soon as it gets back to your original amount, you pull your original investment back out. And you leave, all you have left in the account is the interest, and let that interest build upon itself, and you've got nothing but the cumulative interest going on. Well, what this person did was, people who invested smaller amounts of money, he treated it perfectly legitimate. He was paying them back their money, he was giving them their interest because it was small amounts. He was really going for the high rollers and people who were putting larger amounts of money. And this gentleman apparently fell into that category. Now, I'm not going to give any names or any information or anything like that, so that's not the issue here. The issue is that he came to hackers for help. And obviously, we're a little fishy at that. I mean, how would you react if somebody came to you with a situation like that? I mean, what would your gut tell you? What's your first instinct in a situation like that?
Actually, I've heard of the scam before, so probably, I definitely believe them. But what I would do about it, I don't know what they could possibly want me to do about it. Do they want me to, you know, track this person down, like in Hackers, and fucking own them?
And basically, that is. That is, and it's not out of, it didn't come across to me as an assumed that's what hackers do, bad stuff like that. It was more like, it was a request for help, is the way I took it. But, at the same time, I felt very paranoid and very awkward about the whole situation. So, being the skeptic that I am in a situation like that, I asked a lot of questions. I had to be convinced myself that he was legit and this wasn't some other scam, or that he wasn't some agent trying to entrap us into some, you know, I'm very paranoid about stuff like that, so I had to ask some questions, and I feel pretty confident that it was just the guy got ripped off and he was just looking to get his money back. So, and one of the things that clinched it and proved it for me was he brought a packet of information. Lots of handwritten notes, lots of printouts, lots of emails that he'd printed out, phone call conversations that he'd written out notes from those conversations and stuff like that. The guy's trying, and I think that's a lot of effort to go to trick somebody for, you know, at a meeting. So I do think it was legit. Now, he was kind of hesitant to use, he even actually at one point during the meeting said the H word. And I'm like, the H word? And I actually hesitated. I'm like, what's the fucking H word? Oh, hacker? He goes, oh, I don't use that word. I don't use that word. Okay, whatever. I'm like, why not? What's wrong with the word hacker? So he was doing it out of, I guess, trying to be polite. I don't know. But, you know, if nothing else, out of the whole situation, I explained to him that hacker is not a bad word that she should be afraid to say. And I explained, you know, how the media changes the word hacker and turns it into something that it's not. So what I've agreed to do for this gentleman is I listened to the story. He stayed the whole meeting, which to me is very admirable. It shows interest and shows that he's, you know, he's there, he's willing to listen and learn. I thought that was very, very cool, and I hope he did learn some things. He brought a couple copies of the information that he had. And I did offer to help. I made it very clear to him what I would and would not do. And again, I don't think he expected us to do anything illegal or break the law or anything like that, but I still made it very clear that I would be glad to see if I could find some information on this person. It's an online scam. Most of the stuff is done via email and via websites and stuff like that. So I told him I'd be happy to just go out there and search some information for him and see if I could find anything helpful or useful. But I made it very clear that I'm not going to do anything illegal. I jokingly told him, for the amount of money he was talking about, I told him I'd fly down there and kick the guy's ass.
Yeah.
But, truthfully, I told him I'm not going to do anything illegal, and if that's what you're expecting, to come to a hacker meeting like we're going to do a bunch of illegal dirty work to do this for you, you're barking up the wrong tree. And he seemed to understand that. So I am actually going to do a little bit of legwork. Again, I have a real job, full-time and then some, and all the other stuff that's going on. So I told him I'm not going to commit to anything. Just send me what information he has, and I'll see what I can dig up. So I'm going to do that. And I also told him that his best bet is to hire a private investigator.
Yeah, definitely.
And or a lawyer, but you know, that's later down the road, the lawyer. The private investigator is really going to be the one that gets the information for him now. I can look and see what information I can find via electronic means and give it to him, but what am I going to do after that? I mean, this scam, it looks like, is originating out of the Caribbean somewhere, which is outside of U.S. jurisdiction and comes under special laws, you know. So it's not like it's... At least that's where he's operating from. That doesn't necessarily mean he's physically down there. As you well know, he could be right next door for all we know. But I told him the best thing is to hire a private investigator. Well, he explained that you have to pay a retainer to a PI, and they're not going to guarantee anything for it, so that might just be more lost money. So he's hoping that basically if we can get some information that's valid and we feel confident about, that he can then take that to the private investigator and or lawyer after we've gotten it so that he has more confidence that they're actually going to do something once he gives them a retainer fee. So, I don't know. Would you help this guy? And if so, how far?
I'd probably look into it a little bit, like you said, but I wouldn't help him all that much. And the reason is, first of all, I don't like working for free. Not because I'm like money hungry or anything like that, but I just people tend to take advantage of you.
Right.
No matter how nice they sound at the start, after a while they're going to say, "Well, can't you do this? And can't you do this? And can't you do this?" They just keep pushing.
Right. Understood. And for the record, he did offer, and I just told him that, you know, I will look for free and just see if there's anything obvious. If I actually get into any time consuming stuff, then yeah, I'm you know, I need to be paid for my time.
Right.
So, yeah, I understood. He actually did offer.
Okay, well, that's cool. That's a start.
Yeah, and it seems sincere, but, you know.
But honestly, in a situation like this, you know, where you're saying there's a lot of money involved, and it sounds like it's something that's going to have to go to court, even if he hires a private investigator and they don't turn up anything, still, I think your first route should be to hire the private investigator because, you know, he can't really take anything that you give him to court because the court's not going to give you any credibility. They're going to want to see it from a private investigator. So maybe you can give him information, like you said, to help out the PI, but if the PI needs help, they're not very good in the first place. So.
Well, you know, and that's a good point.
You got to hire the right guy and just get it over with in one shot, if it's that important.
Yeah, and that's a very good point. The PI should be able to do everything that we do, you would think.
I mean, you think about it, like you said, you have a full-time job, you have stuff eating up your time. The PI, this is, like, what they spend all of their time doing, and it's what they get paid to do all the time. They should have all this stuff down to a science.
So. Yeah, and I also mentioned to him, you know, that if this is a serious fraud, and for the amount of money, because he's not the only one that was caught up in this. There was talk of, you know, getting all the people together for a class action suit against this person because he's not the only person that, you know, was scammed by this guy. So I told him that, you know, if it's that big of a thing, then you need to get the feds involved in something like this because it's out-and-out fraud, you know.
Right.
So, and he didn't seem too confident that the feds were worth bothering either, that they were, I guess, not to put words into his mouth, but he seemed to have the impression that they were worthless.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I repeated on many occasions that the private investigator is definitely the first thing he needs to do.
Yeah.
So, and I made it clear, don't count on information from us, but I do want to try to help because here comes somebody who has probably, even though he was polite and approached us as though he was not an anti-hacker, I don't know that. Still in the back of the mind, he may still believe the media portrayal of a hacker, and he just thought he'd give us a shot because what has he got to lose? I'd like to show and prove that hackers can do good things and help. I mean, you know, I hate fraud just as much as the next guy.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that was my drama from this meeting. So, I guess that's all I have to say about that. If I find any good information, I'll contact him, and I have his information and stuff like that, and see what we can come up with. The other thing, though, is this is probably a very selfish reason to question, but getting involved in this suddenly makes me involved in the whole thing, though, and if it does come to court, am I going to be called into some stupid courts to testify that I found this information and I did this and blah, blah, blah? Because I don't want to get involved in that kind of crap either. I don't have time for that.
I would say probably not. I would say the private investigator, if he hires one from the information that you give him, the private investigator will probably say that they got the information on their own. Or
yeah.
Just, you know, not reveal the source of it.
Right. And they can go confirm it all on their own anyway so that it is a truthful statement that they find it.
Right. I think also what you were saying about the feds, whether they're incompetent or not, I don't remember where I got this number from, but I want to say that once fraud or some type of crime surpasses $500,000, I think the FBI really gets interested in it. So he should probably just give them a call and just let them know that something's going on, just so they have a heads up about it. That way later on, if he says, oh, you know, I need to get this piece of information, at least the ball will be rolling, and then the FBI will say, well, you know, you've already told us about this case. We already know it's this much money. We've already verified all these sources. Now we can help you out. Because there may be stuff that's information that they can get that he can't. So I'd say it's worthwhile to get them involved if it's really important. And I want to say the $500,000 figure I got from the book, The Cuckoo's Egg, Cliff Stoll book. If anybody's not read it yet, you should definitely read it.
Yeah, and you know, here's another, I'm just thinking out loud here. What about the fact that getting the feds involved, isn't that a risk of, this is still a hot trail. This guy is still out there, and this scam is going on right now. The numbers and the information are still valid. Getting the feds involved, word gets out about that, and the guy finds out, and he shuts down, and they never find him. So I still think the private investigator is the way to go. I did tell him the feds also, but if it was me in that situation, I think the PI would be the best way to go because he can probably keep it a little bit more on the down low than the federal agents, because they're going to be announcing how they're cracking down on this and scaring. They're going to shut down before they ever get caught.
Well, I don't know. I think
maybe.
I think when it's when the case is in progress, they probably don't talk about it too much.
Yeah. See, I don't know. I'm naive when it comes to that. I don't know how that whole thing works.
Yeah, I don't know. I would hopefully they would be smart enough to set up some type of sting or something like that, where they would keep it all under wraps. But you never know. I don't know.
Yeah, and that was kind of mentioned at the meeting too. Possibly, you know, what would stop another person from contacting the person saying he's interested in participating and trying to buddy up to him and get some more information.
Yep.
And that's the path the PI probably would take, or at least one of them. Ah, but what do I know? Anyway, that's about it. Unless do you have anything else for show and tell, or you want to move on? We have one main topic. A very lighthearted topic to talk about today, and I think that'll be enough for the show, because I don't know if I'm going to be able to finish the show without laughing my ass off now.
No, I don't think I have anything. I've been working on some Astro stuff, but that stuff is all still top secret for the meantime. So
yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up. You do still have a project that you're working on, and when that time comes, we will announce it on the show, but I know the listeners hate it when we tease like that, though.
Yeah, I know. I've been working on this thing so long, and there's so much cool stuff that's going to come out of it. But
yeah, and I guess I have to shoulder some of the blame. I'm trying to make some changes to the server to give you everything you need right now, and for some of these projects,
it'll be worth the wait. That's all I can say.
Right.
But yeah, I don't have any information about my 2600 meeting, because I was supposed to go meet Epiphany and Johnny Lightning in New York City, and I was leaving the house too late. There was no way I was going to get there in time, so I just called it quits.
Mm.
Oh, well.
Oh, man. Oh, so I'm glad you brought that up. Actually, I don't think we mentioned on the show that Radical Future 5 came out.
Oh, that's right. I haven't even got a chance to read it yet.
Yeah, if I forgot to mention that, I did go through there. Excellent, excellent PDF. You know, these guys, I know he had a hard drive crash. He had a lot of problems getting this episode out, this issue out. So props to them for finally doing what it takes to get that magazine out. I know how hard it is to do that, so very, very cool of them. And check it out, Port 7 Alliance. Go check them out, port7alliance.com. You can link to it from binrev.com right on the front page, or any page. Now, our main topic, I mentioned the good segue would have been that XML talk, voice XML, but I just turned it into a segue anyway, because this topic is a new markup language that's in development right now, and I found out about it from the April 2004 issue of Network Magazine, which is also where I found out about Pingtail and their products too. But this new markup language, I hesitate to call it a language. It's called Human ML, or Human Markup Language. Now you can go to www.oasis-open.org for the details of it. Now, that site has several projects on it, technical committees to analyze different technical projects and stuff like that. So when you go to that site, just search or look for Human Markup Language, if you want to get some details on this. But what this basically is, and I'll quote, it's from their site, it says, "The purpose of this TC, or Technical Committee, is to develop and promote the human markup language and related efforts that function to allow the conveyance of human characteristics through XML, containing sets of modules which frame and embed contextual human characteristics, including cultural, social, kinesic, psychological, and intentional features within conveyed information." What in the hell did that mean?
I'm not really sure. I've looked through about 15 or 20 pages on their site, and I haven't seen. They say it's XML, but it's their human ML thing. I cannot find a single place where there's any of this code for me to take a look at it and understand what the hell they're talking about.
There's some great videos, though.
There are some excellent videos that are very relevant to their topic.
They're bizarre. That's what they are. All right, listen. From what I get out of this, we already have this. They're called emoticons. They're called fucking smileys. Okay, I can put a little smiley that says I'm winking. It conveys the emotion or the social kinetic, whatever the crap they're talking about. Embedded contextual human characteristics. Okay, I read their little list of details. I read several pages of it as well. And okay, actually, here, let me see. This is I'll read one snippet that I thought was the closest thing to explaining it. It says that it's supposed to include, quote, gestures, physical descriptors, and other contextual human characteristics within information. The goal is to preserve the fidelity of human interactions and reduce misinterpretations. So this is supposed to be a way, it's like an extension to XML, or a standard within XML.
Right.
To define what I guess what amounts to posture, description of, you know, I don't know, it's like a game of Twister, right leg blue, red leg, you know what, whatever the, it tells you facial features and characteristics, tries to describe the scene and the way people look. I mean, that's the best I can come up with.
Yeah.
It's trying to convey emotions by trying to describe the scene, not only the data and the conversation that goes on between people, but trying to simulate the environment to make it more realistic or something, or I don't...
But were there any code samples is my question, because I can't find them anywhere.
I never saw anything but videos, AVIs. And please, people, go to this site, oasis-open.org, find human markup language, and look at these videos. There is no words to describe...
These guys are XML nuts. I mean, they have another page here that's legal XML, and they describe it as a framework for global sharing of criminal and terrorist evidence. XML specification will deliver reliable authentication and auditing to safeguard privacy and increase effectiveness of lawful intercepts. And they call it legal XML, lawful intercept XML. And they start talking about Homeland Security and all kinds of other garbage.
Oh, man.
Just real crackpots, and all they do is smoke XML all day.
Yeah, and the whole site, that's what their big thing is, all these XML projects.
Yeah,
but the thing is, like, I don't know, that one sounds pretty stupid, too. I mean, I assume there's got to be a couple good ones on there, or I haven't looked through the whole site. I just basically researched this one because it sounded so dumb. I mean, do we really need a committee of people to sit down and establish a standard for emoticons? I mean, is that really necessary? Do we need... Is the lack of having an emoticon standard really a problem with the world that we need to have our best minds and forming a technical committee to come up with a way to make you be able to wink via XML? Is that really a challenge that we need to be facing at this point in our technical evolution?
I think it should be a publicly funded bureaucracy that creates this thing.
Oh, they probably got some kind of government funding.
Oh, yeah. I'm
they
sure
probably
they do.
I mean, you know they do.
Yeah.
I mean, what... I don't know. What in the hell?
They
okay,
do...
Okay, what about this? How about... You still have human interaction with people. How about you actually talk to people face-to-face or over the phone? You can get the feel of how someone's talking by their voice on the phone. Can you tell that I'm disgusted at the waste of time by listening to my voice? I think you can.
LOL.
Yeah, okay, I have to spell out LOL. God, seriously, I don't... And here, just fundamentally, this is, once again, fundamentally flawed to me. Let me go back to this quote for you. The goal is to preserve the fidelity of human interactions and reduce misinterpretations. So I guess if they use some sarcastic comment, you can put the wink in there. Like, basically, it's a emoticon, come on. Like, that's going to reduce misinterpretations. I tell you what, you know what? How is it going to reduce misinterpretations when you can't see the person on the other side or know what they're talking about, inferring, referring to, denoting, without seeing them? All that it means is they put in the wink emoticon. That means nothing. It means they put in that code. They could be on the other end of the speakerphone or other end of the live chat or whatever, winking at each other, going, look at the sucker we got on the line. He thinks that we're playing along because we sent this... a human ML wink or dance or dancing Indian with the butter knife in her hand or whatever the hell they're doing with this damn stuff. It's lying. All you got to do is put the code up there that you want to portray. How does that reduce misinterpretation or preserve the fidelity of human interactions? It's nothing but lying via XML.
But it's XML.
It's still lying. I don't get this. You can you
gotta
can have
be fully
this.
Buzzword compliant, okay?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know how this is supposed to. There's absolutely nothing that's going to stop people from putting on a fake smile and lie behind their teeth behind some pseudo markup language. It's just not. I mean, it's just a silly concept. It's not going to accomplish anything other than make some false, useless standard that A, nobody will use. B, even if they use it, they're not going to believe it. And C, it's stupid.
Yeah. I think there should be an Internet Explorer plugin for it, though.
Oh, there, yeah, there probably will be. Yeah. There probably will. Now, here, and now, see, this is my mind is, I think my mind is demented or damaged or something, because you know what popped into my head?
What?
How long before the porn industry takes this on?
Oh, yeah, of course.
How long before we got porn using these human markup language interactions? I just don't even want to touch that with a 10-foot pole. I don't even want to go there. That could get so, so ugly.
I thought this was a family show and you're talking about your 10-foot pole.
Oh, well, you know. I'm just saying. I'm not bragging. I'm just, you know, pointing out fact. Dude, my back would hurt, but never mind.
Let me just point out one thing about this site. This is actually the first time I've seen this site, oasisopen.org. They're not complete idiots on this site. They do have a couple of XML formats on here that make sense. It seems like this is like some type of XML portal almost.
Right. They're just supporting and giving these projects, just like SourceForge gives a place for all those open source projects or Fresh Meat or something. They're just a place that allows people to put them all together in one location.
Right.
So, I am not in any way bashing that site. I'm only talking about this human markup language.
Because I was going to say, they have the OpenOffice format there, and they have some application vulnerability thing, which sounds kind of interesting, actually. Like a uniform way to describe application security vulnerabilities. It's pretty cool stuff. But
yeah,
ML, no, it's a crock of shit.
Yeah, I'm hoping that somewhere in there are some good, if not great, projects. So I'm not... The site itself may be very useful and have some good information on it.
Yeah, I think if you guys flip through them, you'll be surprised. Like some of the stuff that you might just glance over at first. If you go in a little deeper, there is some really cool stuff on this page. I'm actually pretty impressed.
Yeah, but the human markup language is not one of them. And you know what? I don't think I've done this in a long time. I think it's time I handed out the Fuck Nut of the Month award.
Oh man, I spent 2 years working on this and you're going to fuck nut it?
I'm going to give it the Fuck Nut of the Month award to the Human Markup Language Project. There you go. I haven't done that in a while.
These people put their hearts and souls into creating bullshit posts and posting AVIs to people dancing.
That's their problem. You know, there's people out there that say the same thing about us. These guys put their heart and soul in this radio show and they're posting in their hacking forums. Yeah, damn right we do. Maybe they feel as strongly about their human markup as we do about hacking. You know, good for them.
Because they're spending a lot of misguided energy on that, then.
Yeah. Yeah.
They could be doing useful things, like working at McDonald's.
I was trying to backpedal and be polite for them, but I can't. That's just the biggest joke.
You know what? Maybe you'll get an email. Somebody will explain the whole thing, and it'll just open your eyes to
maybe I'm missing the whole point of...
technology you just can't understand right now.
Yeah, because, you know, I... Yeah, never mind.
Did I mention that it's XML?
Yeah, that makes everything all right.
Oh, yeah, that makes it worthwhile.
XML rock source.
And if it was 1998, these guys would be billionaires already, and nobody would even have any idea what it was supposed to do.
Yeah, you know, and actually this project, if you go back and look at that site, I think they've been around since 99.
Oh, really?
That it was originally started.
That's why they're still doing this crap.
Yeah, and they're still going on with it. And you know what? And let me think of it like this. These guys probably did get hundreds of thousands of dollars in government grant money to study this. So who's the fool now? The guy on the hacking radio show who doesn't make jack squat, or the guys rolling in hundreds of thousands of dollars for research money? probably getting good paying jobs at a university on top of that. Suddenly, maybe I'm not the. Suddenly, maybe they're not the fools after all. No, they're the fools. Yeah, sorry.
Never know though. They if it's all just a scam, hey, more power to them.
Yeah, if it's all just a scam, that would be pretty sweet. That would we, you know, we need to come up with something like that.
I was just gonna say that we got to talk about this after the show.
That's after the show topic. That's a good transition now to the closing up the show because we are about at time. I think. So, shouts. You got shouts this week. I want to shout out Doolin Bland, the article I mentioned earlier. Really getting out there. They're getting tons of hits. Old School Freak is blowing up the beginning of this month as getting lots of hits as this is hitting out some of those Linux sites out there, some of the operating system sites. People checking it out, which is good for us. More exposure, more people that read it, more people that learn it, more people that understand what hacking is about. Very good thing. So I give my shout outs to them for getting that article out there.
Excellent. I give my shout out to Nick84 because Nick84 schooled me on some master stuff that I was kind of hazy on today, and he told me some vulnerabilities about one of his IP phones, and he's got all that stuff up on his website, rootsecure.net. Go to it. It's the shizzle. Yep. And let me think, Decoder and Still Hoho and Code Monkey because they are the lead shizzle.
Yeah, Nick is a real he's a bright guy too. He's you know, we over on my FL2600.com, I'm using his news feed from rootsecure.net on our site over there because he's got that all nice and laid out for us. So just pull in his news feed, and if anybody wants that for their sites, I'm sure he's happy to oblige and get that information, like you said, at rootsecure.net.
Yep.
Very cool. And we actually opened up this episode for a lot of user feedback, if you've got it, a lot of different topics and information that we'd like to hear about if you have experience with it. So if you do, you can email us at radio@binrev.com, and we will talk about it on upcoming shows, follow up on it if we get some more information, or forward it on to, in theory, or whoever, if it's something to go directly to them. And articles, again, I'm going to push for articles if you've got article ideas. Now, I gotta say, I don't want people to be afraid to send in articles. I mean, I don't want you to worry about whether it's going to be good enough or whether it's something that we want or what the subject matter is. Send in the articles. I mean, I'm very open-minded. I'm glad to take a look, and I'm glad to give feedback and help guide these articles, or, you know, if it's something that we can't use in this issue or upcoming issues, or if we want to, you know, I'll help you get it published somewhere else. Don't be afraid to send in articles. I mean, I'm glad to help out. I'm glad to proofread. I'm glad to see the information. So don't think, you know, that first of all, don't think that it's just a DDP thing, that because we write a lot of articles that you have to write a lot of articles or write the same type or style or anything like that. By all means, send us articles of whatever you find interesting, because odds are other people will find it interesting too. So if you do have an idea for an article or you do have some articles you want us to take a look at, send them to articles@binrev.com. And we'll be glad to take a look at them. There's a little matter of a big announcement I was going to make on the show, isn't there?
No, I don't remember anything.
Yeah, you know what?
Maybe, the music and that's it.
Yeah, I thought it was, but something slipped my mind. Well, I guess we'll go into the closing music, which is from Bad Spella, the world's tallest midget. And we're going to close with that. And the big announcement is going to be on April 15th. This is the 6th, we said, so that is 9 days away, April 15th, tax day.
Oh, joy, my favorite day of the year.
Everybody, well, it will be now, because April 15th, DDP Hack TV, Episode 1. And until then, we will see you next week, same hack time.
Same hack channel.
Thank you.